Hello, and welcome to Just Keep Writing,
a podcast for writers,
by writers,
to keep you writing.
My name is Shingai.
I'm Samim.
I'm Gabe.
And I'm Will. And yes, everyone, the East Coast crew is back, and we are going to finish up Refuse to Be Done, and we are in the section of part two, and it's the second draft, where it's called Rewrite, Don't Revise, which might sound a little scary. So I think all of us, we took a lot of time talking about the first draft, and I think it was really great because all of us were in the middle of writing our first draft, and even some of us could be either still on our first draft or starting another first draft to some other works. But the biggest thing that Matt talks about in the beginning of this chapter is to celebrate the rough draft. And he says, you know, one day you will emerge from the long sustained work of your exploratory first draft to discover that you've at last reached the end. Congratulations. Whether this is your first novel or your 10th, take the time to celebrate. Let yourself linger in your accomplishment. Writing hundreds of pages of prose is an incredible feat all on its own, and in those pages is your hope, a first version of the story you wanted to tell. So I want to ask everyone first, how did it feel to finish a first draft of your work, either a short story or your novel in progress? What was the reaction when you actually typed in the end, Samim?
I'm trying to remember now because it was a while ago. I think there was a sense of relief and disbelief at the same time, where I didn't really think that I had like done it, but was thrilled that I had. And then like a wave of despair as I realized how much more work there was to be done. And I tried to shovel that aside and just enjoy the joy of the moment. And intentionally took like a month off of it. Wrote some other stuff, read some things, just enjoyed other types of art for a while.
Was this the draft that you... use this new method of like writing that you were marking off the days?
Yeah. I think, I think there was a little bit of a like addiction to that, sort of checking the days off. And I think I might've taken a day or two off after that, but I think I jumped into writing a short story, right after that, for another like 30 or 40 days, just to sort of keep up the momentum of getting words out. Before I realized, like, I just need to take some time off of this and switch the mode in my brain, because just rereading and revising is like a very different part of my brain, and I needed a break in between before I switched gears.
I love that. What about you, Shingai? How did you feel when you finished like your first draft of a project?
Elated, especially these days. I think for me, just considering how when there is different crisis happening, like personal crisis and then global crisis and then like local and national crisis, it's like hard to finish almost every task. So I think the idea of celebrating yourself for finishing the first draft feels more important now than it has ever felt, just because of how much it takes from us in this moment in particular to get to the end, whatever an end looks like.
It's almost like an act of defiance. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt, but it's almost like an act of defiance to like everything going on in the world that like, hey, I can do this despite everything.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, not at all. I feel like that's exactly what it is. It feels like I'm still choosing to live.
You know, Daniel Jose Older talks a lot about that writing is a form of resistance. And writing is also a form of forgiveness. And writing is also a form of rebirth. And I think when I think about those like words, I think about like, yeah, times are apocalyptic in a lot of ways. It feels, you know, like that the fire with the world just keeps on burning and it can be overwhelming where you're not to create. But the best thing about art is that it's almost as important, if not even more important during these times, to constantly try to create art, because it's the way that we can, you know, escape, deal with trauma, work through trauma, and hopefully think of like hopeful solutions of our future. Gabe, how do you feel when you finish a first draft?
I was trying to think back to the moment I did it with my novel, and I really never had that moment. Because like, given how many starts and stops and things like that I had with my novel, I never wrote at the end. Now I'm working on a second draft, which is a bit more advanced in some areas, in some parts of it. But I think when I felt it, like, it was like, oh my God, I like a huge achievement was with a short story. And because, yeah, that one I wrote like beginning all the way to the end. And in my novel, I had my, that last scene, I had it written for, I think, a couple of years. So I never went and gave myself that feeling of, it might have been part of why I left it for a few months, but not like consciously, not like we're going to talk later about leaving it to stew like in your head. It just, it was a bad time in my life, really. And yeah, it was a weird moment. And now I'm super excited to that I'm close to that part. Like I'm in this draft, I'm around 90%. So I guess a few months, maybe a couple months, I suppose I'll get to that point. So now I will take the advice that we're going to talk in the next parts of this section.
I mean, I think too, just finishing a story, whether it's a novel or a short story or even a flash fiction, is something that, you know, needs to be celebrated. And I think I'm definitely someone who does not celebrate victories. It is really hard for me. And I think, I mean, if we're going to get like deep into psychology, I think a lot of it has to do with like trauma, but also it's like when you grow up and you're just trying to survive and do things, it's like you're thinking, okay, yeah, I did it. Okay, now I need to go to the next thing. And I'm really learning that it's really important just to like recognize what you do and really celebrate yourself. So with that, before we get into the next part, I just want to again tell everyone who's listening, like, you're going to hear, just like you have in the past, like different advice, and take all of the advice of what you want and throw out the rest. Because we're going to really go into the way that like Matt talks about how you actually want to rewrite and not revise your novel. But first, a little bit more on the first draft. You know, Matt writes, you know, nothing quite so dramatic has happened to any of their early attempts, but it remains true that the first drafts of my novels have been the real thing, only full-scale suggestions of what they might become, book-size maps of books. And the second draft that you're about to embark aims to produce the book your book-size map suggests, something much closer to the ideal novel you set out to write. We do this by a process of narrative revision and rewriting. So I'm going to ask this to all three of you. You finished your first draft of your book. Have you thought about it before reading this, that this was like your book size book of maps for your story when you're going in to revise it? Has that crossed your mind before, or was this something that you just thought of when reading the book? And tell me how you feel about it. when you think of it in that aspect, that your first draft is actually just a giant book of maps for the true story that you want to tell. Gabe, why don't you go first?
Right. So, I mean, this part resonated a lot in the sense that recently I heard this phrase that it's the first draft is where you figure out what you want to say. And the second draft and subsequent drafts is to figure out how you want to say that. And I think that was when I wrote this phrase, it was like, oh my God, that is so true. Once you have that experience of finishing a first draft and you see like, oh my God, this is crap. But then you go to the second draft and thinking of this phrase, like, yeah, you, how many scenes, beats, full chapters, chunks of novels you just scrap for the second draft, because it's, but all of those are really informing the rest of the novel, even if they don't exist. Like, that's also how I interpret the iceberg metaphor for writing. Not that you consciously worked on all the background stuff for the final manuscript, but you figure it out while trying out scenes and all the characters and threads and all those things. So I think that this part resonates very, very much with me of just, yeah, it's like finding all those maps, opening all those maps, and then you decide what's the actual road you're going to take to get to what you really want to have.
I love that. Shingai, how do you feel about that concept of you just written your first draft, which is a book that is maps of a story of what you really are trying to say?
I think I agree with it. And I really loved the phrase that you quoted, Gabe, because that, like, even looking at my own first drafts and drafts after that, it has felt like I'm more giving myself different versions of a story that I'm trying to tell. And I think the work of revising is probably the work of, like, now pulling out which of those different versions is the version that will be written down and published. But I think that that's also terrifying. We're talking a little bit earlier with Samim and talking about how coming back to a work after you've put it down, there is fear there. And thinking about this definition, it's also like, yeah, if all you have is a map and you're told you know that you're supposed to get somewhere, there's so many things that could come for you that you're not prepared for yet. So in the redrafting, there's so many challenges that we might not be prepared for, like what the actual version of the story is that we want to publish. Yeah.
I love that. Samim, same question.
I mean, I think I resonated a lot with what Shinghai and Gabe were saying, but I don't think the map metaphor works for me, because it feels like this should tell me where to go, and I don't think my first draft did that for me at all. I think what it might have done is, and I don't want to like try to come up with a whole new metaphor, but it was almost like mixing colors on a color palette and seeing if I got the right tones, and going from there, and not even sketching what I want to paint in a lot of ways. I think I thought I was doing that, like, painting part in that first draft. And I don't think I was, because as I've gone through it, I don't think there's much in terms of the plot from my first draft that was constructive. And that's what I'm realizing now. There's a lot of useful things in going through that and getting to know my characters, getting to know which ones were and weren't important, and exploring them. But I feel like a map should tell me where to go. And I don't think that's what my draft did. I don't even know if it told me where I've been very well. So, yeah.
I mean, you know what? I just love that you said, because I always, a lot of times in the last couple of years, I've been talking a lot about like my process for painting and drawing and art and everything. And you just said, you know, it's kind of like I'm painting and I'm trying to see if it's the right tones. So there's something when you're, the way that I was taught to paint in school by one of my mentors, a lot of times we'll do something called a color study. We've already sketched out our kind of how the composition we want for the painting. And we don't do it on a canvas. We actually just do it like on actually like huge drawing paper, depending on how big the actual painting is going to be. But then what we do is we actually go down to a smaller canvas. Okay. Smaller than the drawing that we did. And we do a color study. We block in all those shapes. We don't do a fully detailed painting, but we do enough that it's like opaque and we try to get the tones down. So I feel like that is what, that to me, when you said that, I was like, oh, that makes so much sense. It's kind of like, am I getting this, balance? You know, am I getting this balance in the story with my first draft? So I thought that was a really great metaphor. And the thing is that different messages are going to hit people differently. So I think anyone who has more metaphors, have at it. For me personally, I always think I like kind of the idea that this is kind of like a map in a way, because it kind of gives me a general idea. Because I'm the type of person when like I'm in a new area and people are like, oh, here's a map. I'm like, ah, screw it. I'm going to do it myself. I can figure it out, even though I'm going to be lost. Like, I think that's like where the dude in me comes in, right? Like, if there's any like masculine part of me, like I'm like that typical bro that's going to be like, nah, I don't need to ask for directions. I'll figure it out, which honestly is stupid, everyone. Ask for directions. But, there's something, Samin, that you said when we first started and you wrote your novel and then you took a break and you started writing a short story. So my question is, after you finished a project, and sometimes a short story can take maybe more out of you depending on the topic than, say, a novel. I mean, everyone's different with, you know, each project, I would say. So my question is for everyone is, one, do you take a break afterwards? Two, if you do, how do you refill your cup of creativity? What do you do? Who would like to go first? I'll pick on someone. Gabe.
I can go.
Oh, Shigai, go. Yeah, go for it.
I feel like this is an easy one. I read, I watch really good shows. I don't want to say the word consume, but like I engage with art. I engage with as much art as I can. I think that always replenishes me, because like when I read really good writing, it makes me want to write. When I watch something that's a really good story, I want to fully engage with it. Like, I want to talk about it with my friends. I want to, like, you know, analyze it and critique it. And I feel like that offers space for generating and creating new work.
I love that. Samin, what do you do? I mean, was the writing of the short story right afterwards, like, how you refilled your well? Or is there other things besides starting just a new story just to go?
I mean, I think similar to what Shinghai was saying, maybe not always watching really good stuff. Sometimes just watching really like mind-numbing stuff too can be helpful. I think that though, when I was writing the short stories, I'd never written a first draft of a novel before, and I'd never been that disciplined about writing in general before. So I think keeping on with the writing the short stories was kind of therapeutic as well. And I wasn't writing in a very structured way. It was like I had some ideas for short stories that had been lingering in the background, and I was just jumping into them and writing very like stream of conscious around them. And I've left them. Like, I have like two short stories that are like 10 to 15K words long that I just like wrote and left alone because I know they need a ton of work. And I wasn't in a space where I wanted to do that really thoughtful plotting and analyzing right now. So there, it was like way more therapeutic than stressful, I would say.
I love that. And Gabe, how, when you take a break, how are you refilling your creative well? Are you going into a project right away? Are you, you know, consuming media? What do you do?
Honestly, like, there's no consciousness behind what I do afterwards, after I finish a project. It's like random. I might go directly into another project or leave this one for 3 days until, like, I hear back from friends, beta readers or things like that, and then I go back. But, like, overall, if I would say, like, on average, the thing that helps me refill it more is, like, doing things with my hands. Mostly, like, I think I've mentioned it before, just making knives. I've noticed that if I'm not working, if I'm not in my workshop, I'm like way less creative, like overall, even if I'm in the middle of a project or in between projects. And often I won't feel the need to write for weeks, even though like I'm building that anxiety in the back of my head that I want to write, but I just don't have the energy. I don't have the space. And then I go work physically on something, and while thinking or listening to audiobooks, because often while I'm doing that, I'm listening to books, mostly re-listens, because I cannot listen to fiction for the first time. I have to read it physically and then listen to it. So I'm obviously listening to the things that I love, to the things that inspire me. So that's when I find those places, but I don't do it consciously. Like if I'm not feeling creative, if I'm not feeling that I have enough energy to write, I don't go, okay, I'm going to do this. I wouldn't even say that I played by ear, but it's mostly random. I should have a better process for that.
No, I think, you know, I think especially when you start to practice art, that there's different ways that you fill up your creative well. And I think art is so... We live in a capitalist world, right? So we think about monetizing things and then creating systems for things right away. And the bottom line is that art really doesn't always work that way. And it can for some people, but it doesn't really. Art is about kind of sometimes the randomness of life. But for me, I would say what I've noticed in the past year, what I've done specifically when I've finished something that really took a lot of, you know, creativity juice, I actually have gone out dancing for the weekend. I've gone out with my friends. We've listened to some really cool music. We've gone and seen like our favorite drag queens or DJs. And like, you know, it's like gays gone wild. So like, I kind of need that. And also I think there's other things. If it's during the summer and I'm able to take off and go to the beach, it's like, for me, water and being in like the sun and warm weather is a way that I recharge. And then also like consuming media. But I consume it no matter what, because I crave it, like no matter what, like I just have to have it. The only thing I don't do, unless I'm like running on the elliptical or treadmill, is watch TV. So I watch everything on my phone, either when I'm on the elliptical or treadmill or on the subway in between places. And that's it. I don't watch any TV when I'm home, because I think this is an, I think Gabe's going to love this. I think this is an ADHD thing. I think I have to be moving to watch something, or I have to be in transition to go. And if I'm painting, like say I'm working on some art, I can only put on a show that I've already know, which it's usually Scooby-Doo. Don't judge. But so I think what I would really like everyone to do, okay, when you start finishing your next project, and really come back and tell us when this happens, be, purposeful with how you like say, okay, I'm actually going to do this to refill my cup, and think about it and write it down for us so that we can talk about it. Because I think taking a break and recharging and filling up your well is really important. And I think as artists, we need to talk about that more so it can give other artists A, permission to take a break, and two, different ideas of like what to do to recharge that sometimes is not even related to that art practice. And I'm going to go to Shingai first because you had your hand up, and then we'll go to Samin.
Yeah, sure. Forewarning, my brain is very much doing ADHD brain right now. So like I will try and connect the dots. But there was something that Gabe said earlier that I wanted to, that I think you actually brought back, Will, when Gabe was answering the question about whether you celebrate the end of a thing. And I think one of the things that Gabe's answer did for me was disrupt the idea that there is a the end. Like, cause Gabe said, I already wrote the end before finishing the work, you know? Like, and it's really cool to think about our work in terms of like, we should constantly celebrate every piece of it. That's one of the ways that I'm thinking about it, because there's no necessarily linear journey, or it doesn't have to be that way. Maybe that's just like one mode of doing it, but it is not the mode. I was also thinking about this when Samim was talking about his journey with his own writing and not feeling like maps as a word is useful when it comes to describing the first draft. Which, Will, you also told us at the beginning, and you told the audience that there is no one way, basically. Like, all of these are suggestions, they're paths, and it's really cool to think about all the other possibilities when it comes to how we engage with our writing. Yes, I think I'll leave it there.
Go ahead, Samin.
I will try to also connect the dots of all my thoughts so that they sound coherent. But I think we're sort of talking about like ritual. And I think what we were talking about earlier about celebrating at the end of something is also like part of that ritual. Mm-hmm. And I, Will, you said something about like, you're not going to psychoanalyze yourself. I had a therapy appointment that was like just on this topic about how I also do not celebrate when I have successes and wins. I move on to what am I shitty at that I need to do next. Even if I'm not actually going to do it, I'm just going to make sure I feel bad about myself. And it actually takes a lot of effort for me. And I think for a lot of us to like have those traditions. I love what you said about like going out dancing. Like I think that's like a beautiful thing to do, and like a way to like celebrate with your loved ones, your friends and your family and whatnot. And I don't do a lot of that. And I need to like be really thoughtful about doing it, cause I do need it and I don't realize it at the time. So there's all these things that you do to like refill your cup. And I think the ritual of celebration is super, super critical.
100%. Gabe, go ahead.
I'm thinking like related to celebration, but also to acknowledging that you have done something. Cause sometimes the thing that I struggle with is the week comes to an end, or a month or a year, and I'm like, what did I do? Like, was like, what useful thing for me, for someone else I did? And I'm like, yeah, I did nothing. But then I go back, maybe now I'm journaling finally. And I go back to that and it's like, oh my God, yeah, I did all these things. And I have this method like in my daily life with coins. Like literally I have pennies, nickels, dimes, and quarters. And like depending on the size of the thing that I did, I put a penny or one of the four. And then I go, I can share the complete method later. But then I have a visual way of seeing what I've done. And I've used that also for writing. Because seeing that I wrote 300 words, 1,000 words, 2,000 words, that weirdly, even though I love Excel, everyone knows that by now here, it doesn't activate like the same thing when I see it, when I see those words or the bar filling up, or even like the word count in my document. But seeing like a bunch of pennies just filling up in a glass, it's like, oh my God, I've written so many times. even though I don't know how many words, but I've written so many times. And that's one of the ways that I, once I convert 50 ponies to a quarter, like that's the switch that I do in my method. It's like, oh my God, this quarter, it might be 50,000 words in so many sessions. And that's one of the ways that helps me not exactly celebrate, but at least see what I've done. And it makes me feel better. And like, oh my God, yeah, I can do that again.
I really like that game.
So yeah, just wanted to share that.
That's pretty cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, I love that. I think too, so then let's make a promise to each other that we will celebrate each other. And because we need it, even if you don't feel like it, you have to say, I just did this thing, and then let us celebrate you and love you, because that's a hard thing. I think especially as like artists, I think a lot of artists go through this where you're like, no, 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 no. And sometimes, you know, just to complete something or just to finish part of it. And even if your novel is published, I always say this about, and my painting mentor says this all the time, a painting is never actually finished, but it is complete. And it's your next work that's going to be even better. And you're going to feel like, oh no, this is more complete than the last thing. And he goes, and that's the whole point of art and writing and, you know, just being a creator, is that each project is bringing us closer to what we want to do and what we want to be as like an artist. So in the book, Matt says, you know, give yourself the break the novel needs you to take. It's as Hilary Mantel once said, I have to take a deep breath before I start the first full revision. I used to hate myself for procrastinating, but now I see it might be wise. You need to pause in holy fear at what you've done and make sure you don't wreck it in panic. And I think those sometimes are really, you know, wise words of that, you know, take a breath. And everyone's different. Sometimes taking a breath for certain people is a couple days. And especially if you're on deadline, if you have a deadline, it's like, all right, I'm going to take a couple days, but it's going to be whatever is going to be that mental release, so you can just clear yourself and then go back into it no matter how much time it is. So this is where we get to the big part of the rewrite, don't revise section. And it's called outlining the first draft to find the second. And I really found this to be really interesting. Matt says, after you've achieved some distance, you'll be ready to reread the novel to rediscover what your material is. It's at this stage, and never before this stage, that I write a full outline of the novel, outlining what already exists. You can do this however you want, in traditional outline form, in bullet point list, or index cards tacked to your office wall, conspiracy theory style, with strings connecting narrative threads, or as a beat sheet, or a set of storyboards. Or you could outline as I do, which is to write a narrative outline, a summary of the book written in approximation of the novel's voice. Why write your outline in the voice of the novel? For me, it helps this planning to feel more like writing, and it keeps me thinking closer to the novel sensibilities. So when I read that, I was like, that is a really interesting, maybe time-consuming thing to do. But then I had the idea of, okay, you know what? Actually, I can even just break this down by a chapter. I can read a chapter and then go through and kind of just either like write it beat by beat, or like, you know, my thoughts, or even maybe in the voice of my character of what's happening. So when you hear that advice, and we'll start with Samim with this one, what did you think of doing that technique of actually going back and outlining your first draft?
It sounded like a really good idea in theory. And I was actually kind of excited about it. And then when I sat down to reread my first draft for the first time, I don't know when I realized this, but it wasn't working. Like, I wasn't feeling like I could pull apart the content and put it into an outline very well. So I started rereading it, got a couple of chapters in, and then set it aside again, took a break, and then came back to it. And that, when I came back to it, instead of trying to outline it, what I focused on was I was focusing on the chapter as like the bullet, basically. And after I read each chapter, or while I was reading it, I did a few things aside from like marking things up in the text itself. In my notes, I had one section that was like, what are the open questions that I left that I never really resolved anywhere, or like unpulled threads that I sort of introduced but didn't do anything with, or just like problems that I see, like plot holes or things that I never really addressed separately. And then at the end of each chapter, I wrote a 4 or 5 sentence summary of like what happened in that chapter. And then my impressions of it. Did I like what happened? Did it feel like this was necessary? So there's some chapters where I was like, this is super exciting. I want to expand on this, do more with it, break it apart because there's so much here. And there's others where I was like, it was very clear that I was just like spinning my wheels or using the chapter to get to know the characters and things like that. And so I didn't feel like I had, and sort of confirmed it by the time I got to the end of it, a plot to even outline yet. Because it was so exploratory. So I feel like now I'm trying to like build the plot with an outline from scratch, knowing what I know from what didn't work in the first draft, and the directions that I want to go in. Yeah. So I feel like building the outline from the first draft, it didn't really work for me.
All right. Shungai, what were your thoughts about when you read that, about like building an outline from, the first draft?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Samim, that you talk about how the way that it didn't work also taught you. Cause like, I'm really curious about that in general, like how, when you do an exercise and it doesn't work the way that you think it's going to work, what else does it open up for you? And actually, what else did it open up for you?
I think it helped me unpack that there are more pieces to the process for me.
Yeah.
That maybe weren't clear or just different for everyone. And that there's like a level of persistence. I mean, with writing in general, obviously, but in this process where like, yeah, the right thing to do after the first draft is probably to re-outline or to create an outline, but that there are maybe a dozen steps for me in particular in between that I need to figure out and do. Yeah. And I think I'm still figuring out. But it did sort of expose like, well, why don't I feel like I have a plot? What's missing? And what do I need to figure out for that to happen? And a lot of it was like a deeper understanding. And this is a murder mystery, so a deeper understanding of the murderer and their motivation, which is not something I'd addressed going in. Mm. I think I knew all my other characters really well, but I didn't know the murderer yet. And I think I had to figure out a lot of the other pieces before I got there.
Yeah. I think that makes me think about how this activity centers plot over the other elements of the story. Like when it comes to my novel, outlining it backwards feels good for the plot. But there are parts of it that aren't necessarily plot driven. Now we get philosophical and it's like, what is plot, right? And like questioning the genres. But I also agree. I think it's a good activity in theory. I think that there are things that it is missing in practice. And I think that those might be individual for folks to find out for themselves what doesn't work and what does, specifically when it comes to outlining parts of the story that aren't centered around plot.
Yeah, that's a good observation for sure. Gabe, when you same question, when you read about like outlining your first draft for the second draft, like taking what you did, and then writing an outline as you're working towards your second draft. What were your thoughts on it?
I resonated a lot with that, but because now that's my method, but it wasn't my method until I realized what Samin said about his story. Because I sort of tried to, before not even rewriting or whatever my first draft, I got stuck so many times because I hadn't figured out like core things of it. And I was just scared and I didn't know how that I like the only way was through. Like I didn't need to figure out things like on a macro level. I just needed to keep writing and figure it out like naturally. Then when I finished this first draft, which I overwrite to like this draft ended up being 250,000 words. But I knew most of that wouldn't be in the final, like in the final cut. But as we said, like in the beginning, it's just exploring and figuring out what you want to say and then like how you want to say it. But now this part of going back to the outline, creating an outline out of the thing that you already have is like now my method. And I've mentioned it before, like that's the thing that when we talked about how I did it for the Greenbone Saga, like analyzing the, in my Excel sheet, if I used it like in the original form of my draft, it wouldn't have been useful. But once I had figured out the things that I wanted to put in, now I could map it and compare like the beats and the scene sequel and all those things. But that was once I had this outline after finishing the draft. So now it's like part of my method. And now I use that for short stories as well. Like a short story of 3,000 words, I write 10,000 words. And not that I consciously do that. That's the way I write. I like to just expand on so many things. And then I go back, do that, write the 10,000 words, put it back to the outline. This works, this doesn't. And then I try to take it down to the word count that I need. So yeah, it was like, yeah, that's my method. But I figured out in years and years of trying out things that didn't work.
Nice. So I'm going to read a section of what, you know, Matt talks about, like how to go about saying if you want to try this. So if anyone's listening, you want to try it. He goes, in other words, not interiority, not digression, not backstory. Write just what happens. As you write your outline, study the cause and effect relationship between events, the beats in the story where time progresses and where action unfolds. Look for what Jim Shepherd calls the rate of revelation, the sense we have of the pace at which we're learning crucial emotional information about the story's central figures. How long does it take to get to the novel's inciting incident? How frequently does something new happen? Where are the events that change the reader's understanding or raise tension or advance conflict? Where is the turn to ending? Which threads are brought to a clear conclusion in the final pages of the novel and which are left unresolved? I think what's really interesting about what everyone has saying, even though this method didn't necessarily work exactly as the way Matt explained it, you've all found a way by looking at it through this lens of what's going to work for you. Because, you know, to Shagai's point, like this is something that you can automatically think of. This is very like plot driven. But what if you're more, as a writer, you know, what if it's more like you're really trying to get down to the character relationships, you know, and how do they play off? So try to, anyone who's trying this, like go on our Discord if you've tried this and tell us what's worked for you. Because sometimes, you know, I was talking to Brent the other day and he was just looking at the outline as like just core emotional beats for the characters, not plot, but like how they were pushing and pulling from each other. And I thought that was a really interesting topic. For me, I'm starting to use this method of kind of outlining what happens in my short story that I'm rewriting. And then I made like another type of outline of the push and pull of the characters, of what's creating conflict, of what's creating each of those wants from the characters in the short story to tighten it, because I basically have a 10,000 word story that I need to cut in half. And, you know, it made me think about, like, well, what are some of the ways that I can do that? So I found it, like, again, even though I'm not maybe following exactly what Matt said, it still helps get those wheels moving and be like, oh, how can I go about this? And sometimes that's what's great about reading books on writing or listening to other people's advice. You might not follow it because you're like, oh, I can go about this in a different way, and it gives you something to think about. So he talks about revise the outline into a plan. Once my outline is complete, I revise it, not the novel, until the outline becomes a plan for the better book I want to write. This is one way of revising the action of the novel at a macro level without having to deal with all the minutiae. Anyone who's ever tried to reorganize a book manuscript by moving 10-page chunks of prose knows how daunting that quickly becomes. It can be difficult to commit yourself to radical but necessary changes when you know it means rewriting every single sentence to make the moved material fit into its new home. We're still going to have to do the work, but for now we're pretending it's going to be easy, in part by making it as easy as it can be. Start by analyzing the novel's plot as it's expressed in the new outline, which is exactly what we were talking about. Sometimes you can't just do it by plot. So say you're doing it just by, like, character motivations. Look at it that way. If you're trying to look at it through a world-building lens, look at it and have how you're building your world and what's causing, like, either conflict or how is it helping or harming your character. So I want to first talk about this idea of printing out or, like, having two screens and literally rewriting your book, looking at your new, like, outline that you have from the first draft, and then looking at the words that you've written and rewriting it. Not just deleting and copying, pasting, but rewriting it as it goes. I felt like this was really, I was like, that is really smart, especially after, like, you've kind of figured out of, like, okay, this is what's going on in my first draft. These are my golden nuggets. This is what I want to evolve on. First, I want to know, how did that make you feel about actually thinking to literally rewrite it? Like, look at that print that you've already had and then start rewriting it in a new document. Gabe.
When I read it, I felt like I was being, I'm not scolded. I'm trying to find, like, the right word for that. But yeah, that, like, that's the gist of it. Cause I've noticed that when I rewrite, it's harder. Like, honestly, it takes more time. It's harder for my brain, but that's consistently when I create the better second drafts. Like, there's no way around it. If I copy and paste and just edit and move things around, it ends up, like, maybe my brain, it ends up being having, like, less quality, I suppose, because I'm jumping around trying to rearrange and move, and rewriting it focuses me more, and better words just come out, like, inspired with the words that I'm reading. Actually, I do have two monitors, and I do exactly that. So it's the better method, honestly. At least for me, it's the better method by far, but it's harder. Like, I mean, ADHD, it takes energy to focus, extra energy to focus. But yeah, it's, I don't know what analogy to do, but yeah, you know what, like, in life in general, some things, the hard things are in general better for us, but we shy away from them, even though they're better in the long run, like, but in the short term, like, no, it's being lazy or whatever. No, not lazy. That's a judgment call. We're not lazy. But yeah, it's, I feel like a child in that sense. Like, yeah, I know what I have to do. This is the way.
I love that. Shingai, how did it, like, when you were reading it, like, how did it make you think, like, okay, I would actually rewrite the book?
It definitely does come across as I like the word that Gabe used, scolding. it's work. It's telling you that you have to do the work. I want to push back on the idea that the harder thing is always the better thing, because I don't think that's necessarily true. But I also know that, you know, what we're doing is play and it is work. Like, being a writer is both of those things simultaneously. I think that rewriting every single word, or like just rewriting the whole story, I think that it offers you an opportunity to just engage in the world a lot deeper. I remember when I was in my MFA program, one of the assignments that a professor gave us was we were reading a story. I think it was Jamaica Kincaid. We were reading one of her stories, and he told us to rewrite our favorite paragraphs just so that we can hear the rhythm of the sentences and like the cadences. Because if you loved it so much, you want to know how it was done. So like, it teaches you on a deeper level, like muscle memory level, what it is that was done. And I guess that's kind of the same idea with rewriting your own work. And also figuring out what could be done better.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up, because in my creative writing program too, is we did something similar where we would read short stories. Like, we did one on Juno Diaz, right? Where my professor would always be like, I want you to look at the rhythm of the language. I want you to read this aloud after you've read it. And now I want you to think about the rhythm of your language. So we had to literally write a story in that same type of rhythm that Juno Diaz was writing. And it was such a great exercise, because it made you get out of your comfort zone. And in some ways, it can help you develop a new voice for yourself, because no matter, you could literally, rephrase something, or you could start out with a paragraph, word for word, and then try to just make it similar but different, and you will sound completely different from that author because you are injecting yourself into those words. I think that's such a good exercise, and it can be challenging. So, Samim, same question. How did it make you feel to think about actually rewriting?
I think it made a lot of sense right off the bat, but it was never something that I did to that scale with short stories. I think in a short story, if there was ever like, yeah, this paragraph needs work, then yeah, I would probably just rewrite it from scratch instead of trying to like edit the lines here and there. But I never, I think, started from scratch to retype it out. I think that might be because I, especially for the first few short stories I wrote, it took a long time for me to put words into the story. Like, I thought a lot about it and planned it out a lot more, not from like a plotting and outlining sense, but more from like a what was I trying to say sense. But for some reason, when thinking about it as a novel, it made a little bit more sense. And having gone through the process, I'm going to throw out so much from my first draft that it makes complete sense. Like, I don't even know if I would need to look at it side by side once I have that outline. I think I would have that outline as a guide. And then I think I would just try to write from the outline from scratch. And then if I got to a point where I was like, this feels very familiar because I've written it before, then I'd probably pull up the draft and see if there was a way that I had written something that I really liked that I want to capture. But for the most part, I feel like I wouldn't even need that side by side. I'd want to, and it's been so long, like it's been almost a year now since I finished that first draft. And so because this is taking a long time anyways, I'd be okay with seeing how it would go to like just start from scratch.
I love that. Gabe, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking for something for that. Like, I would suggest maybe, like the what Shingai was mentioning about looking for that sentence or paragraph that you love about your own writing. Like, before even starting from scratch, like, look for those, because even you might miss them. Like, obviously, you have gems inside your first draft. Definitely, you have things that you just pulled off and you might not even change. So, like, I don't know. At least for me, it would feel like I'm wasting something that's there.
I definitely did. When I did the reread of the first draft, I noted, like, this is really good. Because going into it, I was like, this is going to be awful. Like, why am I forcing myself to reread this? But there's whole chapters where it's like, yeah, this is nonsensical in terms of the plot, because I don't know how it even fits in or if it even fits in, but I love the writing in it. And so I've like noted those things down. And I think once I've gone through the second draft, I do feel like I'm going to need to go through a process where I read both and I figure out like, well, what did I miss mm-hmm. in the second draft, that I want to pull in? Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
Okay. So, we're finishing up this section of the book, and there's a couple things that we, didn't go over, like how to outline multiple threads, because Matt does talk about kind of like outlining certain parts of the book first and then going back, go thread by thread. But read the book, because we're going to move on. But the last thing I want to say is there are two guiding principles to this book, neither of which Matt explicitly stated so far. And I'm reading from the book, everyone. Here's the first one, which guides my second draft and in truth, my entire process. When in doubt, rewrite instead of revise. How do you know if you're rewriting versus revising? Some clues. The presence of new typing, or at least retyping, and the absence of merely copying and pasting. When in doubt, rewrite instead of revise. Trust me. Now, you've written a book again, and also for the first time. One day, like months after you finished your narrative outline and set up your diminishing draft and then started rewriting your novel into the seeming abyss of another blank document, you'll once again reach the end. Congratulations. You've done it. Celebrate. Call your partner or a friend and exclaim it into the telephone. Discover new and more joyous emojis in your writer's group chat. Treat yourself to a meal or drink or a hike or a nap. Then take another break. Art time, live time. Make something new. Do something different. Try out new and different makings and doings until you feel the necessary distance again. That said, there's nothing wrong with not waiting. Hearing someone else talk about their experience of reading your book might be the encouragement you need to preserve it into the next draft. If you think that might be the case, go for it. I really just want to finish this episode out with, tell me something that you've taken away from our conversation today. Samin.
I think the, like you were just saying, like the importance of hearing everyone else's process, and not necessarily like the writing aspect of it, but the ritual aspect of it. Like I loved hearing Gabe talk about, like, I need to go work with my hands afterwards. I need to change like the medium and mode. And that is something that I think I've learned about myself, especially like doing more arts and craft projects with my daughter this last year or two. Like I would get something set up and started and she would get bored halfway in and I would just be there for like an hour or two finishing up my project. And I hadn't given myself the opportunity to like take out a bunch of craft supplies for myself, but since I was doing it for my daughter, there I was. And I do really come back super refreshed from that. And so I think, you know, working with your hands specifically, but I just think the importance of like rejuvenating and celebratory ritual in general.
I love that. Shingai, what did you take away from our conversation today?
I really enjoyed that answer. Just the whole idea of engaging with other creative ways of being. One of the things that I forgot to mention is that I started learning guitar a month or two ago properly. And like, that's been really fun because it's new and there's no stakes and there's no pressure. So I get to like just lose myself in practicing, even though I sound bad. and I'm trying to carry that also into my writing, like into the fear of like, it's not perfect, so it's not anything. And just remember that it's about the joy of practice and process. And I think that that's been circling in the conversation today when we talk about different processes.
I love that. Gabe?
I'm just having here like a little epiphany with one of the comments that Shingai made about like the balance of writing is play and work. And I was like comparing, first draft feels more like play, at least for me, it's more like play, but it has like so many highs because, oh, this new idea, this new character, all these things. But they don't feel as deep as the highs that I get when I'm in that second draft. Because it takes more work. It's like, oh, this is tough. But when you figure it out, it's like, holy shit. Like, it's way more rewarding. It's way deeper. Those highs are deeper, even if it doesn't make sense, literally. But obviously, yeah, it makes sense to people listening, I suppose. So yeah, it's more work in that second draft and further drafts, but it's more rewarding because you're, as the thing that I said before, sometimes when I put more work in those kinds of things, it feels more rewarding. It feels bigger. It feels like an actual achievement instead of like this first draft. Yeah, you're just playing with your colors all around, and then it's. So yeah, I'm going through that epiphany right now, and it's giving me more energy to go to that second draft that I'm 10% close to starting. So yeah. I think that's the biggest thing that I took from this.
I love it. And I guess I'll say what I took away from it is to, I think what I took away more so is that it's just really uplifting to listen to the three of you talk about how you approach work. And also your honesty of like, yeah, that didn't really work for me, because people are going to listen and be like, well, this doesn't work for me. What's wrong with me? And really, there's nothing wrong with anyone. We're going to go about art differently. And I think that's always really encouraging and uplifting.
And this has been Just Keep Writing, a podcast for writers, by writers, to keep you writing. You can find us at justkeepwriting.org. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Feel free to reach out to any of us on our social medias, and please jump in our Just Keep Writing Discord channel. Links to all of that is in the show notes. Lastly, please support our show by going to patreon.com/justkeepwriting. We offer daily writing prompts, early access to podcast episodes, and much more. Thanks for listening, and just keep writing.